Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Arya Irani, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequests of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally, in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to visit our website at www.hinckley.utah.edu for more information. The title of today's forum is Capturing the Utah Legislation in Political Cartoons, Pat Bagley. Pat Bagley, in 1977, during the finance class at BYU, doodled a political cartoon. He submitted it to the student newspaper, The Daily Universe. This became the first published cartoon, which was reprinted in Time magazine just weeks later. After graduation, Bagley briefly worked as a caricaturist in the nearby Orem Mall, before being hired as the editorial cartoonist at the Salt Lake Tribune, where he still produces a daily cartoon. His cartoons have appeared in the Washington Post, the Guardian of London, the Times of London, the Wall Street Journal, Newsweek, and the Los Angeles Times. Over the years, he has produced more than 10,000 cartoons for the Tribune. Bagley is syndicated, and his work is regularly featured at Daryl Cagle's Political Cartoons Index, Cagle.com. He's also an illustrator and author of independent political cartoons and children's books. His liberal political stance contrasts with the conservative state of Utah and has influenced several books of political cartoons and humor, including 101 Ways to Survive 4 More Years of George W. Bush, Clueless George Goes to War, Clueless George is Watching You, and Clueless George Takes on Liberals. In 1992, Bagley received the Wilbur Award for Religious Communication from the Religious Public Relations Council for a cartoon in April 23, 1991 Tribune. He was the first cartoonist to receive this award, which is given for outstanding communication of religious values in the news and entertainment media. Bagley's 2010 book Dinosaurs of Utah and Dino Destination was nominated for the Utah Children's Books of the Year. Bagley was the recipient of the 2007 Torch of Freedom Award from the American Civil Liberties Union of Utah. Bagley was awarded the 2009 Herr Block Prize for Editorial Cartoonist by a unanimous poll of judges. Please welcome me in introducing Pat Bagley.
Thank you.
No problem.
It's Arya, right?
Yeah.
Okay, as Arya alluded, I got my cartoon start at BYU. I was in a finance class, and I was bored stiff. And I used to doodle in my class notes. I'm sure that you guys never do that. But all of a sudden, this cartoon just kind of blossomed right in the middle of my class notes. And it had to do with the Justice Department was going to sue BYU because they didn't allow men and women to live in the same apartment building. And so I did this cartoon, and I took it to the school paper, and they looked at it and said, well, we're doing an article about this, so why don't you, go home and do a finished copy? And so I did, and I took it back, and it came out in the paper the next day. And there's nothing like seeing your stuff in the paper that gives you quite a rush. And so I went around all day long holding the newspaper kind of like this so that you could kind of see the cartoon. And, oh, yeah, that's me. And the funny thing is that I was working at a graphics firm at BYU. A couple weeks later, I go into work, and the secretary says, congratulations on getting your cartoon into Time magazine. And I said, what? She goes, yeah, I think it's your cartoon. So I describe the cartoon, and she goes, yeah, that's the one. So I run out, and I look at, the latest issue of Time magazine, and sure enough, the very first cartoon I had ever done was picked up by Time magazine to illustrate an article that they were writing about this lawsuit at BYU. And it's been downhill ever since. But what I learned from that is that, you know, if I hadn't taken that first step, if I hadn't gone out the door and risked, you know, myself by going to the student newspaper and showing them this cartoon that I'd done in my class notes, nothing would have happened. And in your life, you're going to find that it's always that risk that you take. And it doesn't always pan out. In fact, very rarely does it. But you can be sure that if you don't step outside the door and make those contacts, nothing will happen. You know, but if you put yourself out there, who knows what's going to happen. So anyway, let me get started on talking about the Utah legislature. This character that you see up on the screen is my typical Utah legislator. And he's kind of pudgy, he's got fish lips. And people ask me, you know, why do I draw Utah legislators looking like this? And I always say, well, have you been to the Utah legislature? What I'm trying to achieve here is kind of that well-fed Nordic look. The Utah legislature is, it's very uniform. They all come from the same demographic. 90% of them are LDS. You know, what, 98% of them are white. Most of them are male. You know, most of them are a little bit overfed. But it's a very uniform group of people. It's also nice to have this character to rely on because I don't have to write the legislature on him every time he comes up. So when you see this guy, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Let's move on. Do I just click the button here? And hopefully it's going to go the right way. Okay, this is a cartoon from a couple years ago, 2010. And it is a set of bookends. On one end of the bookend is the Republican Senate Majority Leader, and in 2010, before the legislature even got started, just the week before, he was pulled over for drunk driving, and he, you know, it was such a scandal that he had to resign from being the Republican Senate Majority Leader. Well, the legislature went ahead anyway. And the legislature is always full of good ideas for the rest of us. And so they always get these laws that are virtuous, and they teach us morals, and they teach us ethics, and it's all about, you know, doing good things for us and making sure that we toe the line. Well, at the end of that legislative session, in fact, at the very end, the Republican House Majority Leader got up. And it was the last act of that legislature. He got up and he confessed to 15 years earlier having inappropriately hot-tubbed with a 15-year-old girl naked. And he said nothing inappropriate happened, but there was drinking, and it sounded just... But he wanted to confess, you know, before the entire legislature. Well, the legislature gave him a standing ovation, if you can believe this. So I thought this is the perfect bookend to what happens in the legislature. You get these two guys doing stuff that we can't do, and then in the middle of it, they do all this, you know, they pass all these laws that are supposed to be good for us, and then they confess to these things that they've done which we can't do, and then they get applauded for it. You know, this is just bizarro world to me. Okay, this is quite a while ago. Back in 1996, I did this, and this is before I came up with that particular character for the legislature. So, you see, I had to spell it out there. But you see these two legislators are talking to each other, and one says, "Remember when the word gay meant happy, fun-loving, lighthearted? I hated it back then too." Not a real jolly group of people up there. Pretty serious. Okay, here's a cartoon that shows a couple of legislators. They're in their toaster trailer out in the middle of the Utah desert. And it's labeled a Utah State Park. And you can see they've got junk all over the place. And you've seen places like this if you ever got into rural Utah, where they've got the... you know, the old washing machine, the old refrigerator, you know, is out in the yard, and in the old cars, and it looks pretty trashy. But these legislators are congratulating themselves and saying, think how much better it would be if we ran all the land the feds stole from us. And this has been going on ever since I started at the Tribune. Back then they called it the Sagebrush Rebellion. You know, now they're trying to sue the federal government to get a hold of all the lands that the federal government administers in the state of Utah, which I think is, Tim can correct me, but I think it's like 70% of the land is federally administered. And that bugs a lot of people in Utah because they think, well, it's our land. Well, if it's federal land, then it's our land. That's true. But they want it to be their land specifically so that they can sell it for the highest price to the highest bidder. And the thing is, once it is not any more public land, once it's sold, you don't get it back. So I would rather the feds administer our federal lands than give it to the state, whose highest ambition is to sell it off. Okay, this last year we had the case of the inversions. And it says on this cartoon, the likely Utah legislator solution to killer inversions. And their solution is, of course, as ludicrous as more guns. And you could tell from this last legislative session that they were focused on guns, like they had been in previous sessions. They're a pretty gun-happy bunch up there. The idea behind this cartoon is that the inversion this last year was pretty bad. I think that we had 6 weeks of, you know, straight, pretty crappy air. And I'm still kind of suffering a cough from how bad it was. And it is actually really bad for people's health. And apparently pregnant women, it's bad for them. It's just not good stuff. So they go into the legislative session with this obvious problem. And, of course, the thing they want to talk about is guns and how the government's going to take your guns. Okay, this is okay. John, a couple of people are going into the Attorney General's office, who just was recently elected, John Swallow, and they go in to find John Swallow is pole dancing for this guy named Johnson, who's giving him money, and Swallow is saying it's not what it looks like. Okay, John Swallow was elected Attorney General. He was running against a Democrat who was actually very well regarded. But because Swallow is a Republican, he won. And professionally, Swallow in the legal community is not very well regarded. But simply because he's a Republican in a very Republican state, he was going to win. There's a friend of mine, as soon as Swallow got elected, he said he's not going to make it through his first term without getting into some kind of trouble. He didn't even make it to his first week before getting into trouble. There's this relationship that he has with this guy named Johnson, which looks kind of iffy. And then there's other relationships that he has with people in Las Vegas that look kind of iffy. And he's now being investigated by the FBI. And even if you take Swallow's version of events at face value, what he did is pretty bad. And he probably shouldn't be the Attorney General, which is the highest law enforcement office in the state of Utah. Okay, here we go again with the inversion. This time it's Governor Herbert, and he's got a gas mask on. And he's saying, what, me, worry? And he's Governor Alfred E. Herbert. Does anybody know what I'm referring to here? Where did I get the what, me, worry? What's that from? Mad Magazine, absolutely. Okay, everybody my age who's a cartoonist grew up with Mad Magazine because it was the best political commentary around back then. Going on to the next one. This is the last year's legislature, the 2012 legislature, and it's the Here We Go Again tour. And so there's the free market solutions that they want to come up with, and there's Governor Herbert. There's a kid who's coughing because of all the pollution, hack, hack, hack. And somebody like Governor Herbert is saying that CO2 is necessary to life. Well, technically that's true, but, you know, too much of anything is not a good thing. Then you got the next panel, the pro-life races, and you see these little spermatozoa that look like my little legislator guy heading towards a personhood bill, which the personhood bill means that life begins at conception. In fact, what it means is that a zygote has all these rights and privileges of a citizen of the United States. That's what they're, and they should have attorneys. This is what the legislature wants to do. And then we go into the screwy readings of the Constitution, and you see this one legislator saying, "My Glenn Beck decoder ring is working." And the other legislator trumps him by saying, "Cleon Skousen came to me in a dream." Okay, anybody know who Cleon Skousen is? He was a professor at BYU. Well, he did a lot of stuff. He was mayor of Salt Lake City. He was the police chief. He was a real character. I don't know how else to say it. When I was at BYU, he was a professor at BYU, professor of religion, and he'd written these religion books, you know, the first 5,000 years, the second 5,000 years. And even back then, we thought that he was kind of an extreme character, and he was marginalized. And even the church didn't want him, you know, spouting off his theories too much. Well, he pretty much disappeared, you know, over the last couple of decades. Except that he got discovered by Glenn Beck. And so Glenn Beck has republished his works. And so this guy who was marginalized at BYU, you know, 2 decades ago, is now part of the national conversation, which, again, is kind of how bad things are these days. Okay, there's the pay-to-play. And pay-to-play, whenever you hear that, it means that if you want something done in the state, you've got to contribute to somebody to make it happen. If you want, for example, private schools, if you want vouchers, then if you know what you're about, you're going to give contributions to state legislators so that you get your way. So if you want a nuclear power plant on the Green River, you're going to make sure that you give contributions to all the legislators. And the thing about our legislature is they're cheap. They go very cheap. Okay, the last panel is the attempts to repeal the 20th century, i.e. go back to legislatures choosing U.S. senators. There's the 17th Amendment. Before the 17th Amendment, United States senators were chosen by the legislature. So legislatures would get together and they'd choose two among their number to be a U.S. senator. And the 17th Amendment was passed, which allowed for the popular election of the senators. So nowadays we vote for our senators instead of letting the legislature, you know, which was pretty archaic. But you get people like Senator Lee on the right and even Orrin Hatch on the left there are talking about repealing the 17th Amendment, which is kind of like repealing the whole 20th century. Our political discourse has just kind of gone off the rails. Okay, here's another cartoon. You know, again, it's the inversion. So you can just see the top part of the thought bubble, and it says, "The arrogance of climate change alarmists who say human actions, blah, 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 blah." Something like climate change is just physics. It's just science. You know, you get enough of these chemicals in the air that retain heat, the atmosphere is going to get hotter. The Earth is going to get hotter. And actually, the science is just right there. I mean, it's really happening. And these guys don't see it, even though it's right in front of their faces. You know, in this case, the inversions are a natural event, but the severity of the inversions are contributed by our exhaust, by the stuff that we put into the air from our manufacturing. And the fact that we're all living in this stuff is just means that we're all fouling our nest pretty quickly. Okay, here's a cartoon of the legislators in this big robot legislator machine. And they're saying, "We hate big government," and they're running around smashing stuff, and they're about to step on the city and county building. And they say, we hate big government unless it's us. And so let's go stand in their bike lanes. Okay, here's another cartoon with the little guy. This woman is saying, the Second Amendment says more than that. And he's holding up this sign that says, any idiot can have a gun. And so he looks at it. And he gets an idea, and he writes a little bit more, and he comes back with, any idiot can and should have a gun. Again, the Second Amendment is something since Sandy Hook, which has become a big deal, and people are debating about it. And if you read the Second Amendment, it says, a well-regulated militia being necessary for the freedom of, for the security of a free state, Congress shall make no laws. Somebody help me out here. Anybody got it memorized? Anyway, the Second Amendment doesn't say that anybody can have a gun for any reason. Ever since the Founding Fathers, there have been regulations on guns. But the interpretation that our legislators have chosen to put on the Second Amendment is that anybody can have a gun. Okay, here's our legislators driving this just bizarro machine. It's almost something like Mad Max. And this is what they were working on during the legislature. They've increased the speed limit to over 80 miles an hour. You can go ahead and use a cell phone in the car if you're over 17 years old. Seat belts, well, it's not a hard and fast law. They can't pull you over for not wearing a seat belt. And then there's the keep right sign, because our legislature is, you know, pretty far to the right. And the guy's on his cell phone driving this thing, and the kids are bouncing out of the back of the thing, and he's saying, oh, not much, just enjoying my God-given freedoms. What about you? Okay, and there's a legislator again, and he's covered by this cloud of inversion, and he's saying to this couple, it's none of your business to find out if your kid's teacher has a gun in the classroom. And off to the side, you see the kid, and he's saying, that's my business. Okay, there was that Manti Te'o controversy scandal a few weeks ago where this football player, does anybody know where he played? Was he from Utah? He played at Notre Dame. He's got some Utah connection. But he had this girlfriend that he'd never really met, and he talked to her over the phone, and she was kind of an imaginary girlfriend, didn't really exist. And so I have this panel, Manti Te'o's girlfriend, and there's nobody there. And then this next panel says, Manti City's Army of Obama Occupation. And again, there's just nothing there. And the story behind this cartoon is that Manti City, there was this rumor running around that the U.S. Army was going to occupy Manti and take their guns. And, it was pretty ludicrous. The root of the story had to do with some training program that the U.S. Army was going to be doing up in the valley up there. But, of course, the paranoia here runs pretty deep. I've got a friend who lives in Spring City, in the same valley as Manti, just the next city over. And he says he can go out his front door, and his neighbors are pretty spread out, but he can see the exhaust chimneys from seven different bomb shelters of his neighbors. And the thing is, if people are going to invade the United States, I think the last place they're going to go to want to occupy is Manti, Utah. Are we at the end? Is that it? Well, that's the end. Let me say something just really quick. When I started here at the Tribune more than 30 years ago, the Utah legislature was very different from what it is now. There were a lot of educators in the legislature, and they had a focus on making sure that things were run well and that education was funded. And it went very well. The university that you're going to right now, the University of Utah, is actually a top-notch university. It's one of the top research universities in the United States. And this has to do with the fact that 30 years ago, our legislature invested in the University of Utah. They invested in primary education, they invested in secondary education, so that we had high graduation rates, we had some of the highest SAT scores in the country. Now, all these things we're losing slowly. Our SAT scores are slipping, our graduation rates are slipping, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that the legislature doesn't focus on education like it used to. Today, they're more interested in things that are called message bills. They come up with these ideas that they want us to be moral, that they want us to be somehow righteous, and they pass a bill to make us all righteous, and it goes through the courts, and the courts find that it is unconstitutional. In the meantime, we pay $1 million so that they can feel good about themselves. If you can tell, I'm a little bit bitter, I am. Every year, I keep on thinking, the legislature can't get any worse. They can't be worse than the previous year. And every year, they surprise me. They do get worse. Except for this year. This last year, they put a little bit of a break on the craziness, and it wasn't as bad as previous years. So hopefully the pendulum has swung so far this way that it's going to start swinging back towards sanity. Okay, now I've got some time for questions. Yeah?
Hi. First of all, I'm a huge fan. I love your cartoons.
Thank you.
And my question was, does the Tribune ever come up, does the publisher or the editor ever come up and say, you've gone too far? The cartoon with John Swallow on the stripper's pole, did they ever come up and say, oh, that's indecent, or you know, change it, or anything like that?
No, that's a good question. The Tribune gives me a pretty free hand in what I do. They're very good about letting me kind of run wild. The head of the editorial page has asked me if I do anything about the church or anything about religion to at least let him know beforehand. And there are times when I do a cartoon and I think, you know, I better run this by the publisher, the editor, to find out if this is okay. And, we'll go back and forth and, usually they let me run it. Once in a while, they'll kill a cartoon, but they very rarely kill cartoons these days. It's partly because I've gotten to know where the lines are and how far I can go. Sometimes I push outside that comfort zone just to see how far I can go. Like I'll do a cartoon that I know, won't pass muster, but I just want to see if they're paying attention. I did a cartoon like that during the presidential election, and it was when Rick Santorum was running against it was Santorum and Romney were pretty much the only ones left in the Republican field. And there's that old thing about Romney tying the dog to the top of the car and driving. So I had a picture of the Romney campaign with the dog on top of the car, and then I had the Santorum campaign with Jesus on the cross tied to the top of the car. And I knew that they weren't going to do it. But I had to do it anyway because I thought it depicted pretty well, Santorum's election strategy, which was to, bring religion into it in a big way. So the short answer to the question is, yeah, they still kill a cartoon every so often, but not very often. They're pretty good.
Hi, thanks. My name is Alit. I'm a political science student here. My question was, how do you get your inspirations or your ideas before drawing your cartoon? Because I think it needs a lot of inspirations and ideas before you draw it. Thanks.
It's a good question. I mean, where do I get my ideas for a cartoon? And I wish that there was a simple answer. I have a routine I go through. I go into the office. I wake up in the morning. I listen to the radio. I go into the office and I start I pull up the New York Times, the Washington Post. I also pull up some conservative websites to, you know, see what they're saying. There's the Washington Examiner. I read that. That's a fairly conservative newspaper. So I kind of feel around to see what is current that day, what the issues are. And then I narrow it down. And then I think, well, what outrages me the most today? And so I'll pick on that. And then I start to think, well, what is this like? And, you know, you guys are in college right now. You're stuffing your head with information, which is good. Because, you know, when I was your age, you know, I was doing a lot of reading. I still do a lot of reading. But what you're doing is creating these little file cards of information. And the way I think about it is I kind of toss them in this room after I, you know, get this piece of information. Now, when I do a cartoon, what I do is I go into that room and I start rifling through all this stuff, you know, and some of it is pretty, it's not going to have anything to do with it, but you never know when you're going to make a connection. And sometimes you make this connection and you go, oh, well, yeah, there you go. And I've done cartoons where I've been there at the scanner where I'm ready to scan it in, and then I get a better idea. And I've got to go back to the drawing board and do it all over again. But, you know, a lot of it is just being in the right place at the right time. And, you know, again, you got to think, well, what does this situation remind me of? And then you try to come up with something that can convey that to other people. Okay, another question?
Hi, my name's Dallin Johnson. I'm a I'm an economics major here at the U. And I was just wondering how much of an influence you feel that you have on the Utah State Legislature with your cartoons?
The question is, how much influence do I have with the legislature? And not a whole lot. You know, they're so right-wing that when they get mentioned in the paper or when they see themselves in a cartoon, their persecution complex kicks in. And they think, well, I must be doing something right because the mainstream media is after me. You know, and they can do that without questioning what they're really doing. So I don't think that I have a whole lot of influence, except that sometimes I do. At the end of one legislature, I think it was last year, the legislature tried to sneak this through. It was a piece of legislation that would have made it very hard for the news media, well, for the public in general, to get a hold of information about what they were up to. And we found out about it, and so the Tribune screamed bloody murder, and I did cartoons about it that made them look really bad. And the community got involved, you know, because this affects all of us. And so the legislature got back in a special session, and they pretty much vetoed what they had done before. So, you know, yes, I can have some influence. Now, I do a lot of national cartoons, but if I do a cartoon about Obama, it's like he's being, you know, nibbled at by a minnow, because there are lots of other cartoonists and columnists who are talking about him and what he's doing. But if I do a cartoon about Mayor Becker, it's like he's been hit by a great white shark, because he's going to hear about that cartoon all day long, you know, no matter where he goes. So I do have influence locally when I address certain issues, not necessarily with the legislature, but when I do other local issues, it can bring a spotlight to it. And I have seen things change. I have seen things be looked at better because of a cartoon that I did.
Sorry, my name's Tyler Calder. That was actually my question, so I was just thinking of a different one. On the national issues, what are some of the things that you feel are most important for you to draw, like the things that really do, I don't know, not irritate, but rile you up, I guess?
Well, I guess I've alluded to here is that I really think that our politics has just gone completely off the rails. I grew up Republican. I grew up fairly conservative. You know, my father was conservative. My father was a mayor in this California community. And so I grew up, pretty much, you know, a Republican. And, you know, I believed in balanced budgets and you know, pay as you go and that kind of stuff. But the Republican Party today has pretty much abandoned the Republican Party that I grew up with. If you look at Reagan, Ronald Reagan granted amnesty to illegal aliens. He did cut taxes, but then after he cut the taxes, he kind of jiggered with them, and he raised taxes again 7 times. Ronald Reagan came that close to coming up with a deal with the Soviet Union, banning nuclear weapons completely. This is all pretty liberal stuff, I think, but it comes from a conservative Republican. Richard Nixon signed the bill that created the EPA, the Environmental Protection Act. When I was growing up in Oceanside, California, we'd get these clouds of smog coming down from Los Angeles, and it's worse than what we used to have here this last winter with the inversion. This stuff was toxic, and but I grew up with it and just kind of assumed that's, you know, that's how it was. They let us out for recess, and we'd go running around, and then we'd fall down because we couldn't breathe. You absolutely couldn't breathe in this stuff. But then after they passed the Clean Air Act, and it was signed by Nixon, and it was a bipartisan effort, it mandated catalytic converters and cleaner gas, and all of a sudden, it disappeared. You know, all that smog and stuff, just it was gone overnight. And it had to do with government action. It had to do with both political parties working together. The political party that I see now, the Republicans, it's a party that is just the party of no. You know, no matter what Obama comes up with, they're opposed to it. The Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, was actually originally a Republican idea for national health care. But because he came up with it, they were against it. So I see the Republican Party today as reactionary. They don't come up with good ideas. They just react against whatever the Democrats are doing. And you don't get good government, good policy that way. You know, people talk a lot about, you know, big government, small government. You know, I'm a small government conservative. I'm, you know, liberals are big government people. That misses the point entirely. You know, you should be for good government, a government that really works. Okay. Anything else?
My name is Rochelle Roberts, and I'm a biology and political science major. And I'm just wondering if you have a favorite cartoon that you've ever done, and whether or not you prefer covering national or local issues, or if you kind of like the mixture.
Well, I like doing both because it gives me some variety, you know. I like doing the local stuff because it does hit people where they live. I like doing the national stuff. So I like kind of mixing it up. You know, sometimes I get tired of doing the hard political stuff, so I'll do some little social commentary that's kind of funny. Now, what was the first part of your question?
Favorite cartoon.
Oh, the favorite cartoon? Well, let me tell you about a cartoon that had the most impact as far as people calling in. This is quite a while ago. They were trying to come up with, they were going to give state workers another holiday or something like that. And so I show the state worker in his cubicle, and he's saying, another holiday, I don't know if I can fit that into my busy schedule. And then you look at the calendar behind him, and he's got, you know, holidays off, he's got vacation days off, he's got, you know, sick days off. You know, he can't fit another day off into his days off. So, you know, I did this cartoon, and I go into work the next morning, and at 8 o'clock in the morning, the phones start ringing. And we had 6 lines coming to the Tribune, and pretty soon all the lines were all lit up. And so everybody was taking phone calls because of my cartoon. And so this went on all morning long, and I'm talking to people, and I'm trying to talk them down, you know, and then 12 o'clock hits, and the phone calls stop. And then 1 o'clock rolls around, and then they start up again. I'm not making this up. And it goes on till 5 o'clock. But we had at least 2,000 phone calls that day from people who were angry about this cartoon that I'd done. And it found out that certain agencies in the government, state government, had mimeographed these sheets saying, you know, Pat Bagley did this cartoon. It showed the cartoon, and, you know, you should call him. It had my phone number. And and they'd pass it around, you know, so that's why we got so many phone calls on state time.
That's priceless. Hi, my name's Carter Folger. I'm a student of political science here at the U. Some of my earliest kind of brushes with politics were your cartoons in the Tribune as I was growing up, and I just wanted to say thank you. You kind of invigorated my political leanings.
A psychiatrist can help that, you know.
Seriously. I guess my question, obviously, it actually was covered, which is really fun. But I kind of was wondering what inspired you to kind of be more of a political cartoonist than anything? I mean, I know that you kind of like were launched into it, but is there a particular reason that you can kind of are fascinated by politics? Or, I mean, you seem like somebody who knows.
Well, I grew up in a house that was fairly political. My father worked in city government. He was a city planner, and then he became city manager. He was fired from that position, and then he ran for mayor. And it was the sweetest revenge for him because the people on the city council who fired him all lost, and he was elected mayor. But he was always very aware of what was going on politically. So we had the news on. We had newspapers around the house. My father was a big reader. So it was. I just got it by osmosis. I assumed, you know, everybody, you know, grew up in a house like this. My father would sit in front of the television, and he would sketch, and he'd do these little caricatures of the people on TV. You know, and I assumed, you know, everybody's dad does this. But it demystified the whole thing for me, you know, as I realized, you know, this is something that maybe I could do. And, you know, I told you the story at BYU. I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. And, you know, I'm very fortunate in that I love what I do. I wake up every morning and I think, boy, am I lucky. But to answer your question, it was, I kind of grew up with it. You know, it's just right there all the time.
Hi, Joel Johnson, political science major. You mentioned that this year the legislature kind of surprised you and that they kind of swing the other way. They weren't quite as crazy.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you could just elaborate on that. I haven't heard that before, so I was wondering if you could just elaborate, please.
Oh, you heard that they were as crazy as usual. There were a few things that led that the House of Representatives passed that are kind of crazy stuff, you know, and some of it had to do with, passing a piece of legislation that would allow local law enforcement to jail federal officials if they felt like it, you know. Which, of course, just flies in the face of the Constitutional Supremacy Clause. But again, it was a message bill. They wanted to make a message. They wanted to take this to court when they'd lose. But the people in the Senate, apparently there were cooler heads there, and they sat on it, and they killed the bill, effectively killed it. And there were a couple of pieces of legislation that went to the Senate that usually get passed, but the Senate decided they'd just table it, and they let it die. And, you know, that's not very exciting stuff, but like I say, that's as rational as they are these days. So there aren't as many message bills that we have to spend money to defend this year as there have been in past years. You know, the church is a big deal in the state of Utah, and it's a huge deal in the Utah legislature. Some years ago, the legislature put together a commission to look into the liquor laws, and the idea was they were going to review the liquor laws and come up with a way to overhaul them and make them more rational. And so the commission did their work, and they came back the next year to the legislature, and they had this proposed piece of legislation, but they needed one senator to sponsor the bill, put his name to it before it could be submitted. And they couldn't find one senator to put his name to the bill because it's a liquor bill, and that kind of stuff is radioactive in the state of Utah. Well, this commission had done their work, and they thought, well, geez, you know, it's just sad to see this thing go by the board without, you know, after all this work we've done. So they went down to the church and they gave it to the church. They sat down with them and they said, well, what do you think about this? And so, you know, the people in the church, they looked at it and they go, hey, this seems fine. You know, it seems pretty rational. We can live with this. So by the time they got back up to the state legislature, word had gotten back to the Senate what they had done. And so when the bill was submitted, it was sponsored by every single senator up there. It's true. Absolute true story. So there's Profiles in Courage in Utah.
Hi, I'm Olivia Shaughnessy. And you mentioned your caricature?
Yeah.
Sorry, of your legislator. And I was wondering what other tricks you have sort of from an artistic standpoint of conveying these complex political messages in a really simple and creative way in the cartoons.
Well, this year, as you saw from the cartoons, is a lot of the legislators were covered by this, by the smog, by the inversion. And that was conveying that they're off in their own foggy world, and they don't see very clearly what's going on. You know, they kind of occur to me as they happen. That's the thing that I think of when you ask that question. You know, you go, oh, well, this is a good analogy to what's going on here. You know, in the past, well, you go all the way back to Thomas Nast, who is kind of the father of political cartoons. He drew cartoons about 140, 150 years ago, and he came up with the elephant and the donkey. You know, the elephant for the Republicans and the donkey for the Democrats. And that's a shorthand that we all use now when you want to say, this guy is a Republican, you know, you have the elephant, this guy's a Democrat, there's the donkey. So some of the stuff sticks around for a long time. Thomas Nast also did cartoons about Mormons, and they weren't very complimentary. But he drew Mormons as a turtle, and it was the tabernacle was the shell of the turtle. You know, but that's one of the things that never really caught on, right?
Rochelle Roberts again. I'm just kind of curious how you feel the future of the paper and political cartoons is as things are going more digital. When we have so much more digital media and we've seen this drop in people buying newspapers, how does that affect what you do and what the paper does?
You just ruined my day. No, this, things are pretty grim. You know, I've got kids that are your kids' age. Well, your age. Not your kids, I hope. I have kids that are your age, and they don't read the newspaper. You know, they get everything online. And that has hurt newspapers. We still have a pretty big subscriber base, and we haven't lost much at all. But where it's really hurt us is in advertising. When I started at the newspaper, we would have three full sections of nothing but ads, nothing but want ads. Today, we have about half a page of want ads, and that's because you can go to Craigslist or you can go to KSL.com, and I got to say, it's much more user-friendly, and it's just better, so much better. So it's that is really killing us. We're losing ad revenue, and we're having to find a way to make our way without the revenue that we used to have. So our newsroom is shrinking. Ours is almost half of what it used to be back in the heyday. When I started cartooning, there were probably 350 to 400 newspapers in the country that had their own cartoonist. Today, there are maybe 50, if that many, that have their own cartoonist. And I'm one of the few that's left. And one of the reasons that I'm still standing, I think, is because there's no place like Utah. And there's no place like the relationship that the church has to Utah, to politics. And it's something that I know very well. So I think that has protected me. In that, you know, nobody could understand Utah like I do. They could try to bring in somebody else, but it would take them, decades to bring them up to speed on just how unique Utah is. The future is not like, well, we're trying to figure out how to make it work. You know, personally, I'm doing the social media stuff. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, you know, getting my stuff out there. More people see my cartoons today than ever before. You know, but the problem is monetizing that. How do you, I guess you sell T-shirts. I don't know. So I'm still working on that. But good question.
Hi, my name's Josh Shoup. I'm a traditional, non-traditional student here. My question is more from a career or job standpoint. You talked about your daily routine, how you go in and listen to the radio and check certain news sources. How often do you find yourself writing or drawing more cartoons than you need for that day and kind of sandbagging for future issues? And how do you work around vacation time and things like that with a job that seems to need to be current?
You know, every time I go into the Tribune, it's like a tightrope walk. You know, I do it without a net. You know, if I don't get the cartoon done that day, then, well, my cartoon doesn't get in there. We do have syndicated cartoons that we can pull out and stick in that slot. So when I go on vacation or I'm gone, you know, we can always go to the syndication and pull out other people's cartoons and throw that in there. Rarely, occasionally, I will get a couple of ideas and I'll think, well, that's not bad, and I'll kind of keep it for, you know, next week or in the future. But it's mostly just one cartoon a day, and just kind of grinding it out every day.
Any more questions from students?
Pat, a two-part question. One, have you ever had a legislator contact you, want to meet with you about a cartoon that maybe depicted the legislature either in general or specifically a specific legislator? For example, Chris Butters comes to mind. Another is, have you received feedback from the community, maybe a phone call, a letter that has been exceptionally moving because you really touched people? For example, I'm thinking the cartoon of the depiction of the young girl, Malia, in Pakistan, and here she was clutching a book and valuing education despite the efforts of what we'd call fanatics.
The Malala cartoon that you're referring to went viral. And it just went all over the world, and it must have been, you know, it must have been a million hits on that cartoon. And I knew that it had gone big when people started sending it back to me, and they had translated the English in the cartoon into French and Italian and you know, Russian, and so it had gone all over the place. And I should have brought the cartoon, but I'll try to remember what it says. And it is a picture of Malala, and she's holding a book that says knowledge. And the caption is, it says, "What frightens the Taliban more than American bombs and bullets and tanks? And the thing that frightens them more than all of that is a girl with a book." And like I say, that went viral. It was a big hit. Now, what was the first part of your question?
Members of the Utah State Legislature, whether in leadership or single or individual, say of Chris Butters, when you've drawn a cartoon that really hit home an essential issue at the legislature or in specifically, say, a particular legislature?
They have not called me directly. The last time anybody called me directly from the legislature was, it's got to be 20, 25 years ago. But no, they have not contacted me. Sometimes I do a cartoon, like I did a cartoon about Gordon B. Hinckley. And I had to think about this long and hard because, as far as I knew, nobody had done a picture of a sitting prophet before, had done a cartoon. And it was one of those things, if you're not sure if it's appropriate or not. And you can kind of see, you know, from what happened when they drew pictures of the Prophet Muhammad, you know, just how touchy this can be. But this is even before the Prophet Muhammad cartoons, as I was thinking, well, Gordon B. Hinckley had just become president, and he was unlike any other Mormon president, and that he was out there before the public, and he was going on TV and the radio. He was on 60 Minutes. In fact, he became good buddies with Wallace. But he was on the radio on the King show. What's his name?
Larry King.
Larry King, yeah. So he was on the Larry King show, and I thought, you know, this guy's putting himself out in the public, so I guess he's fair game. And so I did this cartoon showing Gordon B. Hinckley on the Larry King show. And Larry King is saying, and when we return, more of Mormons, ordinary people just trying to become gods. And there's Gordon B. Hinckley, you know, in the studio with Larry King. You know, he's looking kind of charming, looking kind of cute. And I heard all kinds of stuff from people who were outraged on behalf of Gordon B. Hinckley. You know, I got calls, I got emails. You know, they thought it was inappropriate for me to be showing the prophet of the Lord in a cartoon as a caricature. But then I heard through back channels that, you know, people obviously had shown it to Gordon B. Hinckley, and he thought he kind of liked it. You know, he thought he looked kind of cute. You know, and it was not meant in any malicious way. You know, that was pretty clear. But I did find out that there are any number of people who are willing to be outraged on his behalf. Well, and the other funny thing about that interview with Larry King is Larry King just could not let the subject of polygamy go. You know, well, when did Mormons start practicing polygamy? How many wives did Brigham Young have? Do you still practice polygamy? And he just couldn't let it go. Well, the funny thing is that Larry King's been married 7 times, you know, and Gordon B. Hinckley, the Mormon, supposedly polygamist, you know, married once.
We do have time for one more question, if there's no more questions from students.
You have a reoccurring image of a school bus just full of kids, or the teacher in the classroom with a large number of kids, every desk filled, kids falling out the windows. Do you ever hear feedback at all from the community? And more so, does that have any impact upon the legislature with regard to the funding or the underfunding of public education in the state?
When I do cartoons showing, you know, these classrooms full of kids and you know, focusing on the teachers, I find out that the teachers are very appreciative. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that they feel very underappreciated by the legislature. And, you know, and you get not every legislators like this, but a lot of them are, where they treat our educators with complete disdain because they say, well, geez, you get 3 months off a year and you get this and you get that and you get a pension and blah, blah, blah. Well, our teachers are paid pretty poorly in Utah. And I used to go out to elementary schools and talk to the kids and draw for them. And they don't do it anymore because it's too exhausting, you know. And I found out pretty early that standing in front of a class of kids, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds, keeping their attention for 1 hour, you know, just ruined me for the rest of the day. So I say, you know, pay these teachers $200,000 a year. That's fine. You know, they earn it. They deserve it. You know, some legislators do understand that teachers are essential. But by and large, our legislature just does not respect education or educators.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for us. Please, everyone, join me in thanking Pat Bagley for an amazing forum.
Thank you.